Chapter 24, we'll be covering male pathology. Now, I want to start off with the testes. In the testes, there's a couple lesions you should definitely know about. The first one is called a varicocele. This is just a dilated vein within the spermatic cord. It may cause infertility. The next lesion I want you to know about is a hydrocele. This is an accumulation of fluid within the tunica vaginalis. The final lesion is a spermatocele. This is just a dilated efferent duct in the epididymis. The significance of all these lesions is they can present with masses in the testes. Clinically, a great way to tell this from a testicular tumor is these lesions usually can be transilluminated. You put a light behind it and the light often will go through it. A testicular tumor is solid. Light will not transmit through it. Next lesion in your handout is epididymitis. Acute epididymitis, the organ of choice depends on the age. Less than 35, you think Neisseria or Chlamydia. Over 35, you think E. coli or Pseudomonas. Finally, chronic epididymitis, think of TB. TB loves the epididymis. Next, we're going to talk about a painful condition, testicular torsion. By definition, the testes has been twisted on the spermatic cord, cutting off the vascular supply. As a result, you develop a hemorrhagic infarction. This is exceedingly painful. It's often preceded by strenuous activity or trauma. And again, it's a surgical emergency. The testes will infarct and undergo coagulative necrosis. Okay, that brings us to testicular cancer, high yield for the boards. In fact, they love testicular cancer because they can ask you about the tumor markers. So let's start about some general features. How do they present? Well, testicular cancer tends to present as a firm, painless testicular mass. Let's look at some of the risk factors. The biggest risk factor is undescended testes. The other term for this is crypt orchidism. The testes are hidden in the retroperitoneum. Other increased risk factors is being Caucasian, having a family history, and having a testicular dysgenesis syndrome, like Klinefelter syndrome. Let's talk about the diagnosis. Patient comes into your office with a painless testicular mass. You can try to transilluminate it. Testicular tumors will not transilluminate. So the next thing you'll do is you'll do ultrasound. Again, it will show you a mass within the testes, and it's usually hypoechoic. Next thing you want to do is your tumor marker studies. That will give you a clue as to what type of tumor is it. And finally, how do you treat it? Well, you never biopsy the testes. If you think it's tumor, you got to remove the whole testicle. If you biopsy it, you have the chance of spreading it to the scrotum and to the retroperitoneal lymph nodes. And finally, we stage testicular tumors by doing chest x-rays and abdominal and chest CTs. Now, in your handout, I like to refer to table 24-1, which shows the germ cell malignancies. All of these tumors arise from a germ cell. If it differentiates over to the left path, you'll form a seminoma. If it differentiates along totipotential cells, you'll develop an embryonal carcinoma. Embryonal carcinomas can then differentiate into extraembryonic tissues and form a trophoblastic tumor, a choriocarcinoma. Or it can differentiate into yolk sac elements and turn into a yolk sac tumor. The last way it can differentiate is into fetal tissues, embryonic tissues, and form ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. We call those tumors teratomas. I'd like you to turn now to table 24-1. Whenever you have a testicular tumor, the most important thing is to determine, is it a seminoma or is it anything else? Okay? Because if you look at this table, seminomas are radiosensitive. Every other tumor is not radiosensitive. The other thing about seminomas is not only do they respond to radiation, but they have late metastasis, and therefore they have an excellent prognosis. All the other tumors you've got to treat with chemo. They tend to metastasize early to the retroperitoneal lymph nodes, and they tend to be more aggressive. Now let's go through each of the germ cell tumors one at a time. Let's start off with the seminoma. It's the most common of all germ cell tumors. Usually occurs in adults between ages 15 and about 35. Grossly, they tend to be large, gray-tan, bulky masses. They usually do not have much hemorrhage. They don't have much necrosis. They're usually uniformly tan. Under the microscope, the tumor cells are primordial. They look young. They have a lot of clear cytoplasm, so we call these clear cell tumors. For the tumor markers, seminomas tend to produce a lot of placental alkaline phosphatase. That's the marker of choice. For treatment, you can use chemotherapy. You can also use radiation. It has an excellent prognosis. One last variant I want you to know about, if you hear about a spermatocytic seminoma, those usually occur in older males and has a phenomenally excellent prognosis. The next tumor in your handout is called embryonal carcinoma. This usually occurs in the 20s and 30s and 40s. This is more aggressive. It tends to present as a huge, large, bulky mass with a lot of hemorrhage and necrosis. Under the microscope, these are ugly, large, primitive-looking cells. The tumor markers are not very helpful. It's not specific. Sometimes it can have AFP, sometimes it can have beta-HCG. Basically, it's not specific. The last thing I want you to remember is they tend to be a lot more aggressive than seminomas. Let's move on to chorio. We've already addressed chorio in the female system. Again, it's one of the most aggressive germ cell tumors that exists. It tends to metastasize everywhere. And the unique feature is the primary within the testes is often tiny, even though you have metastasis everywhere. The tumor tends to be very hemorrhagic and very necrotic because it's very aggressive. Under the microscope, you'll see a proliferation of trophoblasts. It's a trophoblastic tumor. Remember, the tumor marker of choice is beta-HCG. Let's go on to yolk sac tumor. I want you to remember the other name because the board refers to these as endodermal sinus tumors. So please know both names. This is one of the most common germ cell tumors in children. In adults, it tends to occur as a mixture, mixed with other germ cell tumors. Under the micro, I want you to circle Schiller-Duval bodies. If you hear that term, that's characteristic and pathognomonic of yolk sac tumors. And finally, what's the tumor marker? Alpha fetoprotein. Let's now go to teratomas. Teratomas in women are mostly benign. Teratomas in men, well, 99% are malignant. Often these are cystic neoplasms. Again, they can contain cartilage, they can contain bone, hair, etc. But the problem is they tend to have a haphazard arrangement. You'll see immature elements, and you'll also see outright malignant elements. Last thing I want to bring to your attention is that the majority of germ cell tumors, about 60%, are mixed germ cell tumors, meaning that more than one component is present. Okay, let's move on to the sex cord stromal tumors. In this category, the big one is Leydig cell tumors. This is a tumor that can produce androgens. It can also produce estrogens as well. It occurs anywhere from age 20 to 40, and it tends, again, to present as a painless testicular mass. The thing that's unique is since it's producing hormones, if it's a young child, they tend to develop precocious puberty because of the androgens. If it's an older adult, because of the estrogens, they tend to develop gynecomastia. For prognosis, most of the tumors tend to be benign and have an excellent prognosis, although 10% can be malignant. Let's go on to testicular lymphoma. These are the most common testicular tumors in males over the age of 50. They tend to be non-Hodgkin B-cell lymphomas. Okay, let's move now to the prostate. For the prostate, two big diseases we have to cover. The first is BPH, benign prostatic hypertrophy. Remember, that's sort of a misnomer because yes, the prostate is getting larger, it's hypertrophying, but if you look microscopically, you're mostly seeing stromal and glandular hyperplasia. So it's more hyperplasia than hypertrophy. Now let's take a look at the epidemiology. This is extremely common. The older you get, the more likely you are to have this. In fact, take a look at age 70. But if you reach age 70, 80% of men have BPH. Last thing I want you to remember is it's not a pre-malignant condition. It can be associated with cancer, but it's not causative. Pathogenesis. We believe androgens play a role, but it hasn't been elucidated yet. Let's talk about the gross. You'll see glandular and stromal hyperplasia, and it usually occurs in the center of the prostate, either in the transitional zone or the periurethral zone. And that gives you all the signs and symptoms. Because how does BPH present? It presents with urinary obstructive symptoms. The prostate has gotten large, you're compressing the prostatic urethra, and what do the men complain of? Well, they have problems starting and stopping the stream of urine. They've got a decreased caliber or force of stream. They've got post-void dribbling, urinary retention, and sometimes incontinence as well. Okay, now the PSA can be elevated with BPH, but it's usually not very high. In fact, it's usually less than 10 in most cases. Last thing I want you to remember is complications. Since you're obstructing the outflow of urine, these patients have an increased risk of developing UTIs. In fact, when you think about UTIs, it's almost always in females, unless in males they have to have BPH. Okay, it's always associated. The other thing that can happen is because since the urine can't get out, the pressure in the bladder increases. The bladder begins to become trabeculated. You can have outpouching or diverticulum. Okay, and finally, how do you treat it? Well, you can do what's called Roto-Rooter. You can send a catheter up that has a clamp at the end and actually take bites out and remove all this hypertrophied tissue. Not a pleasant thought, but that's the treatment. Nowadays, there's one other treatment we can use drugs now, anti-androgens, androgen blockades. Okay, let's move on to prostate cancer. It's one of the most common cancers in men. So will it be on the exam? You bet it will. Let's look at the epidemiology. It's the most common cancer in men. It's the second most cause of death, cancer death in the United States in men. The incidence increases with age, and who gets it most? African Americans. That's the highest group. Let's look at the gross. These tumors tend to be very ill-defined. They're malignant tumors. They also tend to occur in a very unusual location. They occur around the periphery of the prostate, especially along the posterior aspect. Now, this is very clinically useful because how do you detect these tumors? You can detect them by digital rectal exam. Remember what runs right behind the prostate? The rectum. So on a digital exam, when you put your finger up, you can actually palpate the posterior lobe of the prostate, where most cancers arise. The other way we're picking up a lot of these cancers nowadays are PSA. We're using PSA to screen men. And the PSA levels tend to be greater than 10 with neoplasia. Now, once you've got a mass detected by palpation or you've got an elevated PSA, what's the next step? Well, the next thing you've got to do is, remember, to make the diagnosis of cancer, you've got to get tissue. So what do? You do a transrectal ultrasound to localize the region, and then you do needle core biopsies to get tissue. Once you confirm that it is malignant, what's the treatment of choice? Well, most people will opt for prostatectomy. Take out the prostate and the cancer. If it's spread, how do we treat metastatic disease? Well, we can use orchiectomy to remove the source of androgens, or you can use estrogens or androgen receptor blockade. What a choice. Orchiectomy or drugs? Give me the drugs, please. That's my choice. One other thing I want you to remember is when prostate cancer metastasizes, it tends to go to the lumbar spine. And when it does, it tends to be osteoblastic, bone forming. In fact, on the exam, if they give you an older male who comes in with back pain, one of the big things in your differential should be a metastatic prostate cancer. Okay, lower vertebral pain, common presentation. Once you treat them, how do you follow prostate cancer? Well, you follow with PSA. When you take out the prostate, hopefully PSA levels should go to zero. If they start to creep back up, you worry about recurrence. And that brings us to the conclusion of the male pathology section.